And our special guest, Stephen Quayle, on our next program, by the way, our first hour guests will be Oliver Williams and Larry Haber. Larry Haber is the attorney for the John Teeter Time Traveler family. Oliver Williams runs the John Teeter website. We may get some people in who are putting together the documentary on John Teeter and talk about that in the first hour before those special Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. When we come back, more with Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, let's talk about end times for just a bit before we get into Giants at the second half this hour, if we can. The fallen angels, end times. You believe we are in the middle of all this now, don't you?
Yes, I do, and I believe that the battle that is coming up and now is upon us is so life-threatening, so dire. And here's the thing. People say, well, everybody before us has thought that, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that now we're at a time where the weapons have accelerated beyond the ethics, or I would say I do not believe that men given weapons are going to hold back using them, especially when you're dealing with a clash of eschatology. Let me define what I mean by that. Ahmadinejad of Iran believes that the 12th Mahdi, the Iman Mahdi, is to return, but based on the prophetic understanding that he and others in the Middle East possess who believe in that, that the fact is that that can only come about by a total cataclysm. So when people claim that this stuff has no relevance, George, I think they're greatly missing the boat. Should, for instance, you're a Navy guy, should a carrier or multiple carriers be sunk in the Persian Gulf due to the possession of the squall torpedoes, which go about 200 miles per hour underneath the water, or super sunburns or whatever, we are going to have an escalating crisis in the Middle East. I believe it's going to go nuclear. I believe World War III is a necessity so that the Antichrist, who takes the place of Jesus Christ, comes on the scene, brings the whole world under subjection. I think that anyone who doesn't see the surveillance society as ultimately leading to that, good night. How many millions of cameras you need in London to watch everybody? I mean, it's getting to the point if you stand at a urinal or, you know, go into a stall, you've got a little voice almost telling you how to proceed from that point. I'm not being gross. That happens to be the case. But we're coming to the point now where things are escalating out of control. And I believe that obviously when you understand the position of end time events in all the weather anomalies, in the great earthquakes. You go to Revelation chapter 12, it talks about the great earthquake. You go to Revelation chapter 16, it talks about an angel pouring out his vial on the sun. People say, oh, that's a metaphor. I say, you really think it's a metaphor? There are actual images of the SOHO, the Solar Observatory Helioscopic, the satellite that monitors the sun all the time. Literally, it looks like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, George, but it looks like an angel doing a belly flip right into the surface of the sun. And that's when all this hyperactivity began. I mean, literally, it's not just a comet going to the sun, which brings me to the idea of the electrical universe. The bottom line is that Jim McCaney, who's probably one of the most, in my opinion, outstanding scientists in the world.
Very astute.
Very astute, has been telling the scientific community what's going on. So NASA, which painted themselves into an egotistic corner in saying that comets are dirty snowballs. No, they're plasma. And when you increase a specific amount of energy, energy can't be created or destroyed, only changed in form. The bottom line is the Earth is absorbing that energy, and it's actually increasing. It's kind of like the biblical concept of the lake of fire. A plasma is a superheated gas, i.e. the sun, and it's contained by a magnetic field. As you increase the energy into the plasma, you also have to have variations within the magnetic field to contain it. So the point that I'm trying to make is there's never been a time when technology, prophecy, and I would say men's evil intents. I've been listening to, you know, the background as we go to breaks and stuff, and the whole concept of good and evil. I know you deal with that a lot, and the concept of good and evil is something that prompted men who would go into the darkest parts of the world. When I say this, the civilizations that have no Western contact or any contact with, quote, Christianity have basically known that they're good spirits and evil spirits, and rather than a lot of them will pay obeisance or sacrifice to the evil spirits, rather than to serve the good spirit. Where does the knowledge of good and evil come from? You know, it's beyond getting into the philosophy of that tonight, but what I'm saying is, to answer your question specifically, I believe we are poised on the precipice of perdition in the most perilous time, and when you deal with all the biological fallout, you and I are talking about necrotizing fasciitis, when you're dealing with the birds dropping out of the sky, the weather, the extreme weather, earthquakes, volcanoes, hydrogen sulfide, you know, when you put it all together, I mean, people have got to understand that while everyone would like to have equilibrium in their life, it isn't going to happen.
Let's talk about the New World Order, the one world government, which you're very aware of, and this push to reduce the population on this planet from 6.3 billion, where we are now, down to 500 million. Is that real? Is that something we should all be concerned about, or is that just a bunch of...
That's real. It's stated over and over again. The point is that it's my contention in my book, Genetic Armageddon, that there really is an entity known as Lucifer, who became Satan, that since day one, the purpose of intermingling with the seed of woman created by the living God was to genetically pollute, if you will, the race of humanity to substitute a transhuman entity. In other words, destroy all mankind. So that's very much implied. By the way, the articles coming out on transhumanism and genetic Armageddon, genetic modification, as you know, combining human and animal DNA, I mean, it used to be one or two a week. Now it's in the hundreds a week. I think Tom Horn does probably one of the best jobs on his news service, Raiders News Update, to keep people informed of the genetic alteration. The Pentagon spends literally untold billions on super soldier, genetically enhancing warriors that won't need to sleep, won't need to eat, will have the strength of 10 men. And you and I spoke about the little girl in the Ukraine that weighed 90 pounds and could lift 900 pounds. And, yeah. You know, the bottom line is that's called the Hercules gene. So the point is, when people say, well, we've got alien DNA in the human genome, I say, good night. What do you think the Human Genome Project is all about? It's identifying that. And the point is that most people don't understand. You know, the basis of my book on giants, Genesis 6, is that fallen angels, meaning they left the estate that God created them to exist and came to Earth, had sex with Earth women. God destroyed them in the first flood. He preserved Noah and Noah's family because Noah's family are the only ones that weren't tinkered with in their genes. And then after the flood, there was a second infusion of fallen angels to do the same thing. Now they're doing it genetically, and they're doing it at such an accelerated rate. When people think that, Dolly the sheep or any of the minor accomplishments of cloning, they don't understand this stuff's been going on for almost 60 years. So it's way beyond anything that any of us can imagine.
You know, Stephen, watching the breaking news of this bombing of the embassy in Athens still tells you, though, how vulnerable we are.
Absolutely. And that people aren't going to quit until, it's all done. Now, I think that's what I may be not clear enough on. It doesn't matter what you or I actually think as to what may be the real thoughts behind, this Middle East crisis.
Right.
The point is, the people that believe that they must actually martyr tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, to bring upon the Iman Mahdi, the 12th Mahdi, under the ultimate Muslim caliphate, or the point is that obviously the Bible talks about the Battle of Armageddon, but preceding the Battle of Armageddon, which is the last battle, that's when Jesus comes back. People are so willing to accept the fact that spacemen created us out of a celestial goo, yet they won't even acknowledge the fact that then who created the spacemen? I tell you, George, you and I have talked about this. I don't believe people cross light years to come to Earth to have a good time with Earth women, I just don't believe that.
No.
I mean, for a good time, stop on Earth and see Daisy.
All right, but why that phrase in the Bible?
What phrase?
That they took the sons of the daughters of man.
Well, simply because through the daughters of man, the Redeemer, in other words, because of the universal fall, the universal evil that was in the world, God had a plan of redemption. And if you could completely interfere with the human genome, then obviously Jesus couldn't be born sinless. And Jesus is, from the biblical perspective, the way, the press, the mainstream press, non-Christian, quotes more biblical terms, end of the world, Armageddon, all that stuff, than the Christians do. It's kind of an interesting anomaly. But the point to answer your question specifically is that in order to pollute the genetic stock that God created when he created Adam and Eve, and I do believe God created Adam and Eve. I don't believe we were conceived by the Space Brothers. I believe we're, like, for instance, most people who believe that the aliens created us and are coming back to save us from ourselves. I just say this, if you substitute the word Nephilim, the fallen ones, the fallen angels, I would agree with the fact that they're alien. They're alien to this this realm of existence.
True.
And that's why when you and I talk about giants and we talk about this stuff, it's always interesting that even the people that are familiar in the contemporary or in the ancient historic realm knew that the angels, the fallen angels, were the sons of the stars. And by the way, in the word Hebrew, star, you know, actually is as another word for angel and messenger. You know, the point being is that there's no separating the two. So in essence, the fallen angels had sex with earth women, produced these giants, which became the mighty men of renown. The giants basically turned to cannibals, ate everything. God had to intervene and basically destroy the giants. They fled to every corner of the world, and you've got myths, legends, and actual indications that the giants are still alive to this day in different areas of caves. Now, everybody looks superficially on the earth. They look at the pyramids, and very few people outside of guys like John Anthony West and stuff have said it's not what's above the ground, it's what's under the ground. They look at all the ancient, magnificent palaces and the things that have been built on a scale that's not human size, and they wonder, you know, gee, isn't this interesting? And then you get the official party line to come on and say, oh, yes, the pyramids were built by Hebrew slaves, blah, 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 blah. I categorically reject it, you know. I believe that the pyramids are specifically called the Pillars of Enoch, and Enoch is a biblical figure who was 360 years old, who God translated to heaven, which we get the Book of Enoch from. And the point is that you've got all of history attesting to the fact that the great monuments and the greatest feats of engineering, science, technology were given to us by a superior intellect of, quote, fallen angels. In the Book of Enoch, the New Testament refers to this, the Old Testament refers to this, but people don't want to deal with it. And the Catholic Church got uncomfortable with it in around the 4th century, and so that's why, you know, it kind of, quote, unquote, fell out of favor. But it explains good and evil, it explains rebellion, it explains redemption, it explains everything. And that's why I call it, if you will, it is the, when you understand this whole Genesis 6 the complex of Genesis 6, and it's pretty simple, that you can understand why the ultimate battle becomes Lucifer, i.e. Satan, versus Jesus, and Lucifer's followers versus Jesus' followers. And it's going to be a battle royal, and the technology that exists is supernatural technology. As you know, you've talked to other people, George, in history. There are records of entire desert areas of the world being turned to glass. Vitrified is the actual word. The different Hindu texts.
Like there was a nuclear explosion.
Exactly. The Hindu texts, going back 4,000 years, Sanskrit, talk about Gurkha and the power of 1,000 suns. They talk about vimanas, flying machines. They talk about all this stuff. Obviously, Zachariah Sitchin's done a remarkable job in cataloging a lot of the finds around the world. He and I just draw different conclusions.
Sure. I mean, he believes we were genetically altered by extraterrestrials.
Right, and I believe we've been genetically tampered with by fallen angels. And that
from other systems, planetary systems, or dimensions?
Well, I would say this. They're both transplanetary and transdimensional, okay? Because the Bible teaches that, obviously, in the realm of heaven, Paul, the Apostle Paul, said, he was taken to the third heaven. I don't know. Some people say there are seven heavens, but the point that I guess is important to the subject is the fact that we are spiritual beings battling out in a physical realm, not understanding the spiritual consequences of the decisions we make on Earth. And so when Sitchin and others who believe that we're basically, and then as you know, the term for that is panspermia, you know,
right.
Interesting. The point being is that I find it fascinating that so much of if you go to any of the steles, the panels, you've seen them, the Assyrian panels, the Babylonian panels, you'll see a king seated, and the people who are standing aren't children. They've got beards, and they come up to the king's knee. You know, by the way, I have this all on my website, on my giant part of my website. So after 3.5 decades, I can tell you point blank that tracking down men, tracking down expeditions, tracking down images, tracking down this, tracking down that, you can't escape it. It's all over. The Native Americans knew about the giants. Even Buffalo Bill Cody was presented with a giant thigh bone by the Sioux, the Point Sioux Indians. The Native Americans are more aware. Can I tell you something interesting about Yellowstone?
Yeah.
I have searched Native American, those who have written about Native Americans. You're going to find this fascinating. The Native Americans spoke so little of Yellowstone, there's only one reference, and it was written by a guy that was in Bozeman, Montana, in the 1870s. That's where I live. And basically, the gist of the statement was the Indians did not want to tell the white men, or the Native Americans didn't want to talk to the white men about what was going on Yellowstone. They considered it the gateway to hell. And there's one statement where an Indian chief said, if we tell them about it, the first thing they'll do is go and open it up and release all these entities. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, it sure is.
And I got to tell you something. Right now, there are people that are doing the same thing. They think that men in their wisdom believe that they can contain the entities they release. They will get their release. They will not be prepared to deal with the horrors of what comes through. It's kind of like, you know, on Independence Day, the movie, there are a lot of women up on the top of the hotel.
Waving, right?
Waving, you know, wanting to bear their children, and they don't understand. They're destroyed. See, again, it's fascinating, and I can tell you this. The living God is not a prude, nor is he afraid of the truth. It seems strange to me that so many people don't want to deal with the historicity of this and just dismiss it. Every time, by the way, I got to tell you something fascinating. It seems like every time I'm on Coast to Coast with you and we do a show on giants, within a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks, the History Channel or somebody comes out and tries to...
I noticed that.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
And they try and say, that these are Gigantopithecus, the big apes, you know what I'm saying?
As a matter of fact, now I think this picture is a phony, but I'm not sure. I'm going to have Lex post it. It's a huge skeleton of a man. It was found in Saudi Arabia.
Right. That is a fake, okay?
It is. But
that is a fake.
It's worth looking at, though, isn't it?
Right. It is because, again, you know, it's like the ancient wonders of the world. One of the seven wonders of the world was the Colossus of Rhodes, okay? It was a giant that his legs spanned the harbor entrance to Rhodes, the island of Rhodes. And, you know, it's fascinating because, again, it's just simply impossible. I deal a very dear friend of mine, Klaus, in Austria, just returned last month from an expedition down to Colombia, and they were unearthing the skeletons of 20-foot giants, okay? 20 feet.
My gosh. The real deal.
Those are real deals. So if you have human growth hormone and you've got, you know, and I want to make this clear, the giants that I'm talking about are the ones that are huge, have two sets of teeth, six fingers, six toes, are the ones the Bible talked about, Goliath, his brothers, the king, Og of Bashan.
More on them when we come right back, Stephen. We'll be back. Well, Alexis posted the phony picture of the giant, but go take a look at it at the top of the feature article section at coasttocoastam.com. It's at least well worth looking at. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, but I'll be right back with more with Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Stephen Quayle, our guest. We'll take phone calls next hour, wide open with so many things to talk with you about tonight, Stephen. Stephen, what have you been working on lately, by the way?
Well, right now, George, I'm working on a couple of interesting additions to the next volume of Genesis 6 Giants. I want to just share with people that I think that if they'll get this and understand it historically, it will explain so many of the question marks. You talk to a lot of people, obviously, through your talk show. I talk to a lot of people, and there are so many questions out there, like the big one. Why is this? Why can't people just quit being at each other's throats and enjoy? It's simple. You know, enjoy the life, the wonderful world. Why do we have to destroy it? Well, the point is that we're now in a position, I believe, where the technology is so far advanced and the desire to use it so far advanced, to get back to your question previously about why 5.5 billion people have to die, the point is that I think that the next volume of my book, Genesis 6, and if I have time, and I got to be honest with you, I don't know I have time to bring it out, because the thing is that, you know, you do the research, you get the artists. Again, I've got my artist going overboard on a lot of the images from history. Every day, let me share this, every day something new turns up. And what's fascinating, what I'm following up right now in South America through the works of my friend Klaus, is you remember the old Fountain of Youth story, Ponce de Leon?
Right.
Well, what's fascinating is that the giants were aware of so much of the mystery because they were taught it by their angelic, you know, fathers. This is what got, by the way, Solomon in trouble. If people believe in the historic Solomon, I do. History records there really was a guy like that. The point is that he was smarter than any man, but when he got into the spirit realm, dealing with the spirits, obviously calling up familiar spirits, which I talked about, they tricked him, and obviously he lost that wisdom that God had given to him. But what's fascinating, George, is that the area in South America has got water that is related to giants that has, and you're going to love this, colloidal gold, colloidal silver, in a balance that is unusual. And they literally, you know, the whole thing of Ponce de Leon, this is something I've just learned from my friend Klaus in Austria. They were looking for that because the giants had basically brought the knowledge of that, you know, from their fallen angel fathers. Now, the Bible teaches that those fallen angels that committed sex sins are held in everlasting chains of judgment. But the other fallen angels are going to come to earth. And the book of Revelation, I believe we're seeing that right now. Because if you look at what we're looking at is an email that came into me earlier tonight, a man who's very highly connected. He said, Steve, and this man is in, one of the intelligence agencies, just left him because he couldn't take anymore. He said, if people knew what was going on and the potential for what could blow up into World War III, he said, all the churches would be filled tomorrow and people would be praying because they don't understand the ramifications. And I guess, George, that's what I'm trying to bring to people, are the ramifications of where history is headed.
Right.
And based on the different things that are out there right now on the horizon, this genetic engineering thing, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it literally, if you read many of the articles that I link to or post on my site, you know, it is fascinating because there is a contempt for humanity. There's the idea that the Borg is better. There's the idea that anybody who has freedom is somehow an enemy of the state. And as you know now, all mail, snail mail, can be open. Most people say, well, that can't happen. Well, it's happening. So all of the guarantees that made this country great, the country that our forefathers, brothers, sisters, mothers, daughters have fought for all these years, is basically going the way of a global mindset. And that global mindset makes 1984 look like Little League. And isn't that fascinating? That when you look at the way the world is headed, that this idea of controlling the mass, everything they think, do, and say is in the television image that they took today, you know, kind of like the old Sager and Evans tune. And again, I think it answers your question, that underlying question, I think, that that, you know, you're perplexed by, is why can they just not get along? And the reason they can't get along is there is a thing called rebellion against God, and the battlefield's earth. Not to use a title for a crummy movie, but the bottom line is, it is really a battlefield, and it's about what's at stake are men's souls. And when I say men's souls, humanity is such a marvelous creation. You look at all the wonderful things, and let's take the word love, okay? Seriously, love is an amazing thing, because even the people that believe in chemical determinism and all those that, you know, we're nothing more than stardust, you know, and pressure and billions of years, or as Carl Sagan used to say, billions and billions of years. The point is they can't bring up the answer to free will and love, because you know what love is. You know, when you have that true love and the fact that God loves his creation, you know, this idea that God's up there just waiting to send people to hell. First of all, hell was created for the devil and his angels, and I can tell you this, that based on where we're headed right now, if we go into a nuclear inferno, I don't think people have to wonder too much about, is the afterlife real or not? I mean, so many people are going to be shot into it immediately that I think it's going to take them by surprise.
And the rest will be back to the dark ages.
You got it. And whatever's left over. I just had an email from a guy that's listening to us right now out on the West Coast. He's taking his sons, taking his sailboat, and he's heading out of the country. He says,
where's he going?
He's going someplace south the equator, you know.
Wherever the boat takes him, I guess.
Wherever the boat takes him. And he says this, he said this, he's come to this conclusion, you know. He says he's frustrated with the lack of concern that people have. He said, it's time, I've come to the conclusion, it's time to get my two teenage boys into a safer location.
And, some of us have to work, though, Stephen. We can't just pick up and
leave. Can I tell you something? Well, I got an answer to that. Jesus said the night comes when no man can work. George, in a matter of minutes, and again, you're a Navy guy, you know what would happen if we get into it with our aircraft carriers. You know what would happen at $200 a barrel oil, okay? You know what that will do. And the bottom line is whether we can keep the Straits of Hormuz open or not, that's beside the point. But I think what people had better realize is this, is that all of the increase in military, the increase in naval assets, that's not going for the purpose of Iraq. That's going for the purpose of Iran.
Right. You are so right.
And we have now a standoff. We have the confrontation where Ahmadinejad literally believes it is. And by the way,
and we went into this consulate in Iraq, under the guise of getting these terrorists or getting these war folks.
Yep.
I wonder if it was to just get the Iranians to try to do something to give us the real reason to go in and get them.
Well, that's what people are saying, and they're saying that the Athens thing is payback, you know. But the point is that egging them on, I believe that it is obvious that we're not pulling people back. I don't know if you saw the story, but in the last 2 days, Australia has sent more ships to the area too, you know. So everything is building. Now, what happens? See, I think that's something when people discuss World War III, they just automatically think it's a Stone Age. Under mutual assured destruction, which was the policy in place between pretty much at that point in time, was the Russians and the U.S. We blow you up, you blow us up, so there's kind of a standoff. But that doesn't work. That mindset doesn't work when people believe that if they basically provide themselves as martyrs, that they can bring about the return of the Mahdi. So the point is mutual assured destruction. I mean, you've got Ahmadinejad making the statement that he is willing to sacrifice, 30 million people or more to bring about the return of the Mahdi. Now, I'm sure the people that he's willing to sacrifice don't see it that way.
I think he'll be long gone before any major conflict occurs.
Well, let me say this. If he is long gone, the globalists will just replace him with someone else.
Now, that's an interesting thought of the theory, Stephen, because I've always said if we eliminated pure terrorism, pure hatred, let me say it that way, that the globalists would do something to keep the hatred alive.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, George, you can't, you can't change the heart of men. And to men, I once spoke to a very, very wealthy man. This man was phenomenally wealthy. And he said, Steve, he said, it gets to the point, by the way, by his own admission, he was an Illuminist, okay? He said, it gets to the point where money is only secondary. He says, it's the power over men's lives.
Of course. They've got more money than they need, Steve.
Yeah, and again, but
we're bored with it.
Yeah, but what was interesting is that all I can tell you is I got a mental image when that is like the biggest Cheshire cat ready to eat the small mouse, just playing with it before it devours it.
And you were the small mouse?
You got it. But this mouse had a big mouth because I said, your plans are going to fail. And you know what he told me? It was interesting. He said, this is word for word. He said, he's probably listening to the show tonight, by the way. He said, I've made my league with Lucifer. I'm going to hell. But he says, I want for my child to grow up to be a Christian because he says, I know what hell is like. I've made my league with it. but I want my son, whom I love, there's the love word, okay, to spend the rest of his life with Jesus in heaven. Now, here's a guy, okay, understand, all the money pretty much in the world, you know, and I mean, he's very, very wealthy. His son, he wants raised, you know, as a Christian. He's divorced, by the way, and no woman could live with this guy. The bottom line is that I thought that was an interesting, if you will, perspective into the minds of one of these guys, you know, because he told me point blank, George, how his world works, you know. And these guys sell literally their souls. Jesus said, what does it profit a man to gain the world and lose his soul? These guys basically say, and I meet them all the time, they say point blank, they say, look, our heaven is here on earth. And I said, but you close your eyes, you draw your last breath. And I tell them to go and read an amazing book called Voices from the Edge of Eternity, or Gottschall's Dying Words. It shows you how Voltaire and Rousseau and all the famous people, including Charles Darwin, died. And it's fascinating. The bold statements in life sort of dissipate when they're facing the grim reaper.
These people sound like they're all from the movie Eyes Wide Shut, Stephen.
Well, I got to tell you something. The movie Eyes Wide Shut is, how should I say this? It is a very accurate representation of the attitude that a lot of these entities possess.
Yes.
When I say entities, let me share something with you. A lot of these individuals are classically demon-possessed.
And, you know, I was going to ask you that. You really believe that?
Absolutely.
This isn't just greedy people now.
Oh, no, 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 no. Literally, they become, and listen, some of them have told me so. They welcome the darkness into their life, you know? They are so, they hate Jesus so much, and it's fascinating. You know, I look at Jesus. He didn't beat anybody up. He didn't launch any ships. You follow me?
Right.
And because he was a threat to the power establishment of both the Pharisees, Sadducees, and Rome. Isn't it interesting? The religious guys run to the political guys to get them to put Jesus to death. And I always ask myself this. The supernatural hatred for Jesus, a guy that basically is love personified, healing. I believe he's the Son of God. I believe he's real. The point being is that, and yet the whole world hates him, yet the world's embracing death and denying life. That's, to me, George, a pretty manifest representation of insanity.
That's kind of scary, Steve.
It is, because, again, choosing, you know, and see, that's the key. Then we get back to free will. And that idea of free will, that when given the choice between light and darkness, given the choice between doing it God's way or the devil's way, there are those, obviously, who choose the Lord's way, and then the majority seems to want to choose the devil's way.
Well, how do these people get possessed? What happened to them? I'm sure they weren't this way all the time.
No, the point is that the natural defenses that they had in their lives, quite candidly, God gave man such authority that that authority takes its place. The Bible says, resist the devil and he must flee from you. Jesus said he gives his believers powers to tread on serpents, scorpions, and over all the power of the devil, and nothing shall by any means hurt them. It's one thing to have it as a saying. It's another thing to apply it to their life. But likewise, people have openly and taken that free will, George. Free will is, if you will, the key to who you allow into your life, and they welcome the powers of darkness. It's interesting, too, when Jesus cast out demons, you know what one of the telltale signs of the demons leaving was?
What?
Foul smell, like rotten eggs.
Which is what we have right now.
Which is what we have right now. So the question is, if we have a situation where literally these entities have been bound, can you imagine the smells that will be excreted? By the way, as you know, the sense of smell, olfactory, is also an electromagnetic reaction.
Might be time for us to get John Hoag back on to talk about Nostradamus' prophecies as well.
Well, I got to tell you, Nostradamus, you know, obviously, he had to write in such a way that they wouldn't, you know, try the guy for a heretic. But the point is that I don't think it gets any plainer than the bottom line is that we're losing the vegetation on the planet, where desertification is coming. We're losing the sea life in the oceans. Every day there's another story that we're, you know, losing more of the bluefin tuna. The ahi's dying. The plankton's dying. Every day we know that the plague, I mean, the necrotizing fasciitis that's genetically altered, and George, the Bible says half the population of the world is going to die. Half.
Well, that's what the globalists would like. I mean, that's not even enough for them.
That's not even enough for them. But there comes a time when, except the days be shortened, there be no flesh left alive, you know. But God says, for the sake of the elect, he's going to shorten those days. So let me ask you this. How many times have you heard someone say, I just don't know where time's gone? It's like everything.
All the time. We were just talking about that a few days ago.
Right. And time, it literally is a mystery because, again, you know, when there's the eternal realm, and you can't say eternity's a million years plus another billion years. Eternity is not bound by time. There is no meter of time in eternity. But the point is that the angel says enough is enough and the mystery of time will be no more. So the point that I'm trying to make for people is that, look, we're on this earth, even with life extension, maybe to 100 years, but what happens after that? I think that very soon, I think that with the ideas that are being put forth in the realm of physics, they're going to tear the fabric of the material world and the spiritual world, and they're going to come together in such a horrific way that most people don't realize it's God's mercy that keeps them from seeing this stuff. Because quite candidly, most of the people that I have known, and I've known thousands of people being in the field that I'm in, that have, how should I say this, experienced the supernatural, and I can tell you point blank, it's one thing when you see it on a movie screen, it's another thing when you see it in your bedroom.
Well, have you always been this way, this in tune, I think, with yourself?
What, in tune with myself? No, I don't think that. What do you mean by in tune? I'm not trying to play semantics. I just don't know.
Well, you just seem to know where you're headed. You know where you're going.
Yeah. Well, let me share this with you. I had an encounter with Jesus. I was a pretty wild guy, okay?
Really?
I was as wild as they come. My kids still hear, what dad was like, and I got to tell you.
I've got to give Stephanie a call and the inside scoop here.
You should
here.
Talk to her because, I mean, you know, the bottom line is she still hears it too, but. Interesting, Hal Lindsey, who you've had on your show, came to Montana in 1972 and presented, you know, at that time, the late, great Planet Earth, and I was the president of a wild fraternity, which, by the way, got kicked off campus and never allowed
I want you to pick up that story when we come back, Stephen, okay? I want to hear about the wild side of Stephen Quayle. And then we're going to open up the phone lines. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM.